another episode, 2018, Real Deal with a Kill. Man, we ended off 2017. We had the show for about 6 months, and we ended off with a bang with Daniel Booby Gibson coming through the show, blessing us with the knowledge he gave and the inspiration. You know, so shout out to everybody I was on the first 6 months. Lil Flip, Megan Thee Stallion, J. Mulan, Winston Shepherd, John Jordan, Coach Mike Davis, Stephen J. from HBCUGameDay.com, Theo Dorsey, everybody, the whole nine. Y'all know who y'all are. So we're going to start 2018 off with the man, the doc, the OC, Dr. Chief, directed one of the biggest songs in Houston rap history.
Yeah.
We're still tipping. He gave us Lupe Fiasco, Hip Hop Saved My Life, Mike Jones Back Then, Paul Wall Sitting Sideways, along with many others. He was in the era where Houston was at the top of the rap game in 2005, the era I know. His award-winning work on the adolescent variety show Teen Summit won him and his producers an NAACP Image Award for Best Children's Programming. Now, that experience led him to one of my favorite childhood shows, BET Rap City, one of the longest-running hip-hop shows on cable, as well as the underground Rap City, The Basement. Award-winning music video director, Dr. Teeth is in the building.
What up, man? Damn, I see you did
your... I have to give you the intro. You know what's crazy? Because I got to TSU, and that's the school you're teaching at right now, people that don't know.
Yeah.
So I got to TSU in 2014, and then I seen you around a few times, of course, and I said, damn, Dr. T sounds so familiar. What is? I heard that before. Like, who is that? So then I forgot who told me, but I was like the same. They said, oh, Hip Hop Saved My Life. He made that video. I said, word? Him?
Yeah.
We got some stars. We got some professors that stars at TSU. People don't even know that.
Nah.
So let's rewind back to 13 years ago.
Okay.
And you was in the middle of all of the greatness that Houston provided in 2005.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, what happened was I was producing, like you said, Rap City. I was at one point the senior producer of that show. I co-created some elements of that show. When cats rap in the booth, that's my creation. I came up with the booth.
That was your idea.
That was my idea. So if I was never born, they wouldn't be rapping in the bathroom. Because initially, Stephen Hill wanted it to be like Rap City, the garage.
Oh, in the garage.
Senior producer at that time was Craig Henry, and he was like, hip hop's not in the garage. That's like grunge bands, rock bands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, punk.
It's in the basement. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You get your vinyl, you go in the basement, you play your parents' records.
Yeah.
You do all, you know, your beats, all that's kind of like in the dungeon, in the basement. So I had seen the Doors movie, and I saw Jim Morrison. They were recording in the bathroom for better acoustics. He was doing his vocals.
Yeah.
And so I kind of pulled from that Oliver Stone movie. Let's make the booth, because we were going to do live performances. Let's make the bathroom the booth, and cats are going in there and they're rapping. So the crazy thing is that Craig Henry came up with a way to design the basement where the set was a 360 set. So no matter where you turn, there was always something to look at, which made all the artists feel like it was a real.
Yeah, and it looked like that on TV too.
Yeah, and they were all looking to see Mama Tigger.
Yeah.
You know, and so I remember when Snoop came, and Snoop was like, yo, Tuck, like, oh shit, this ain't a real basement. I thought they was going to take me to somebody's house.
Right,
and
right, right.
Going, you know, so yeah. It's like, man, I've been watching this show. Like, I couldn't wait to get on.
What year the show first debuted?
The Basement, I think, started in either 99 or 2000.
And
prior to that, it was just Rap City, and we would go to different cities and interview the artists in their perspective or respective city.
Right.
Home.
Yeah.
You know, which I enjoyed that because we did a lot of traveling.
Yeah.
When Stephen Hill came, he wanted to make it a set format.
Yeah.
Kind of contain that budget.
And for listeners, Stephen Hill is the...
He was the executive president of programming at BET.
And he's no longer there.
Yeah, he got the boot in the spring.
Yeah, we can talk about that later on, but yeah.
Yeah, he got the boot, so... He, you know, I always say cats like that don't fall down. They fall up.
Yeah.
You know, And so you'll probably see Steven running some network somewhere else. But it happens. You haven't worked into this business until you've been fired.
For sure. Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, I've been fired by some of the best of them.
Yeah. And it happens to the best of them. And I've yet to get hired from somebody and get the boot, because I don't know. Want to get the boot anytime soon.
Nah, you don't. It don't feel good, but yeah. It happens. And you just keep moving, man.
Yeah, you live and learn. And with the Rap City, when you was doing that, was it BT's idea to bring you along, or was it? Because I know you said you made the basement part. Right. That was your idea.
Right.
But the show as a whole. Yeah, exactly.
All right. So I always tell this kind of story that I graduated, thank you, Lordy, from TSU.
Yeah.
I didn't get magnum cum laude or any of that. I graduated by the skin of my chinny chin chin.
Yeah.
So, but I was always a big dreamer.
Yeah, and that's right. I'm going on right now by the skin of my teeth.
Yeah.
That's right. I'm on.
I was a big dreamer. So I always planned and visualized my destiny. I had Minister Farrakhan told me that you can't build a house without a blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
And so every plan needs to have, every dream needs to have a plan.
Yeah.
If you're building a house, the first thing they're going to bring out, the contractor's going to bring out, is a blueprint of where to put the foundation and where to start laying the bricks to make that house solid.
Mm.
And so that made a lot of sense to me. And so what I did was, while I was in school, I started laying the blueprint to my future.
Yeah.
And I was just like, when I graduate, I'm going to work at these places that I laid out. BET was one of them. And in that, I started working while I was in school to be able to get hired there.
Mm-hmm.
So as I was a student at Texas Southern, I was working at Channel 11 in the sports department as a photographer and a weekend editor.
Yeah.
And I was building my reel. And then when it was time to get out of there, I took that reel and the letters of recommendations that I could get from the top people at KHOU.
Mm-hmm.
And I started soliciting. Back then, they didn't have internet.
Yeah.
You had to call on the job line.
Oh,
on
yeah.
The job line, they would list the jobs that were available. Teen Summit happened to be one mm-hmm. of those jobs. And because I was a single parent, Channel 11 did this story called Our Family, Your Family, where they would kind of take the KHOU family and do like a inside look of them in their lives and what they do yeah. at the station.
Like an access look, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so they did one on me going to school, raising my son, and going up there for work.
Mm-hmm.
And I used that along with my reel to send to Teen Summit. I mean, what better person to produce a child's television programming
yeah.
than a dude that's raising a child,
right?
And works at the Ninth Market at the time for CBS.
Yeah.
So I got in over there, and then I busted my butt over there and got fired.
Yeah. Oh man, got the booted. Oh man.
What? Man, I got over there and I had a lady that was my boss, and she was mean. She had it in for me. I told her I wasn't a writer.
Yeah.
I was more production, but she felt like I could do it. And I knew I wasn't stupid. So if you teach me.
Yeah, you can do it.
I could do it.
Yeah.
But when I got there, she didn't want to teach me. So I had to figure it out. And what I did was I spent the night. I would wear the same clothes for about 3 or 4 days at BET. I would spend the night up there and comb through their computer, find old scripts. Because you had to write your scripts for the show. My scripts were horrible.
Yeah.
But I would find old scripts, and I would look at those scripts and make my script based off of their scripts, right? Mm-hmm. And then once I give the scripts to her, she would red mark them scripts up. And then somebody else would have to finish it. So then I would take that script, study that script, and then next time my show came up, I had that script and other scripts that I could find
yeah.
to start putting it together. So I started getting less markings, but she would mark even stuff that I probably plagiarized from the other script.
She found the smallest things and just mark it.
And I knew, I said, man, this chick got it in for me. So,
But wasn't she the one that hired you?
She was the one that hired me, man. But I think she was trying to get at me, and I didn't, you know. I didn't really, I was green as hell. So I didn't really catch on to that. Yeah. My mother kind of hit me to it.
Yeah. And how old was you at this time?
I was 30.
30. You said so you were still, yeah.
So, or 29. And I had, I didn't pick up on it. I should have. Yeah. But what she made me do was really spend my time up there really trying to learn. Because I'm living in D.C. I ain't in Houston anymore. I moved my son and myself out there. I'm trying to survive.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they give you the 90-day probationary period, and then they can fire you.
Yeah.
In 90 days, she let me go. But the person that was next to Bob Johnson, Cindy Mahmoud Muhammad, she was under Bob Johnson.
And Bob Johnson was, that name sounds so familiar.
Bob Johnson owned BET.
That's what it is. Okay, gotcha.
And hard work recognized hard work.
For sure, yeah.
Teen Summit was shut down at 6, 7 o'clock. People leaving. John Tucker was there until all night, until the next day, for days. And she would be there all night. Her and her team would be there all night.
Yeah.
You know, and then they leave early in the morning, about 8, come back around 1, 11, and start back working. So she started asking, who is that guy in Teen Summit still here at the copy machine printing? And
it was you.
It was me. So while I was at Teen Summit, I was able to accent my strength, which was packages and the production side of it, and create a reel, a body of work.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I found out that Rap City had an opening, even though I had got fired. And I sent my reel over there, not knowing that this lady is over programming. And so when the reel came and the work was extraordinary, I got hired.
Wow.
And then a year later, I was a senior, the lady that at Teen Summit, she was a senior producer. A year later, I was a senior producer of Rap City. So I had the same job she had. She was hot. She
called HR. I know, I bet. Oh my goodness.
She called HR on me when they first let me back in the building and said I had been coming up to the studio, sneaking around in offices. She was trying to hammer time.
She one of those people. That's one of them bosses you don't even want. Well, oh, my goodness.
She was trying to do your boy in. And then she started calling over to my desk wanting to talk.
Hating. You know what it probably was? She wants some play. You didn't give it to her.
That's what I think it was. She wants some play. But the grown man in me now know, I got you, baby.
Yeah. You get
give
him back.
You see this? Yeah, I got you.
Yeah.
Nah, but yeah, I still deny that, but I think so. I mean, I was a terrible producer, terrible writer.
Yeah.
But I absolutely had some talent, and if I didn't, I wouldn't have got on at Rap City.
Yes.
And I thrived there.
Sure.
I got there, man, and I took off, and I had people over there that really nurtured my talent. And that's why at TSU, it's the thing that I teach in terms of the things that I really realize is really important is being able to meet deadlines and execute projects to the deadlines. It's something that is a must when you really get into the game.
And then we're gonna get to TSU too, because I want to talk about that a little bit later. But going back, you from Cincinnati.
You're right.
From Ohio. And how long you was living there before you moved to Houston?
Man, I was living in Cincinnati. I didn't come to Houston until after college. After high school.
So when you was in high school, TSU was the school you went to.
Right.
First, so you stayed through your whole college career.
Yeah.
Was it like a full scholarship or was it?
I had a scholarship to play basketball at McNeese.
Okay.
In Louisiana.
That's a small fact. I didn't even know you used to put it on a hardwood.
If Cass was like, you play football? Nah, I was skinny as hell, dog.
For real?
Yeah.
What position you played?
I was a guard.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn. I can't tell.
I was a guard, man.
I don't think like a small forward or something.
Nah, I was a guard. You know, in high school, you know, you play forward, but I was, you know, you're just 6'2". You talking about, and I would play some posts, but as a forward, I was a two guard.
Yeah.
in the swing. So playing forward, man, I need to be about 6'4".
True.
I need 2 more inches.
True. So what? So you was playing basketball. When did the love of producing, directing, where did that come from?
I had planned that, was going to McNeese to play ball. Got to McNeese. I was a horrible student, man. I've never been a great student.
Same here.
Horrible.
1.4 GPA high school. That's me.
Yeah. And I got down there. We registered. Joe Dumars was playing for the Pistons. He met me and showed me around.
Mm-hmm.
The coach got fired. So when we got home from registering, I had a letter saying I wasn't accepted at McNeese.
Damn.
But I just registered.
Exactly.
So my mother was like, well, you got an acceptance letter, and you just registered. She said, well, what they probably, they got to accept you.
Mm-hmm.
She said, well, what they probably going to do is put you on probation. And I didn't want to go to college under probation, you know, and I just said.
That's just a sorry start. Like,
that's a bad start, knowing I'm not a good student, man. It's like somebody holding a gun to you.
Yeah.
So, and then telling you to perform, and that's just not. That I wasn't that strong. So
yeah.
I had some friends going to TSU that I knew were academically challenged.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
If they going to TSU, I go to TSU.
That's how I got TSU, too, on a little bit of – I was surprised I got it because I had a 2-1. I'm going to finish the story, but I want to say this on the side. I had like a little 2-1 before I transferred to TSU.
Yeah.
And this was, they accepted me. I said, damn.
Yeah,
thank the Lord I got it. I'm like, okay, but I ain't trying to stay ACC.
Well, they had an open door policy, man. You didn't have to take the SAT or the ACT. You just register and get in.
Yeah, and I sucked at that too.
I sucked at same thing. So I was gonna have to sit out my freshman year anyway.
Yeah.
But my boys went to TSU, and that's how I got to TSU. While we were there, I was a music major. Another thing you didn't know.
He was a music major.
And we had a recording contract. We had a recording contract on the table with Motown. We were singing a group.
What's the name of the group?
Shades of Black. And you remember the group, The Boys?
They, I mean, Boys to Men.
No, it's a group called The Boys. They had a song called Down My Heart. They were on The Face. Well, they were on Motown.
Yeah.
But Babyface and L.A. Reid produced their tracks.
Okay.
Hakeem from The Boys was producing our demo.
Yeah.
And so, if you.
So you were singing? I didn't know that.
And so we was in the music building at TSU. We was producing our own music. We would then, you didn't have all the technology you could do now.
Yeah.
Then you had to go to the studio and buy a reel, big ass reel. They would put on the deck, because that tapes wasn't out then.
Yeah.
And you had to record. I think we recorded on a 24 track studio, and we produced our music to get to the point to get the Hakeem. Anyway, I had a deal on the table, single deal on the table with Gerald Busby. Had got to Motown, and our group imploded.
Yeah.
We couldn't act right. And I had my son, and I was just like, the whole process of doing the music, I kind of changed it. I was like, well, maybe I should get in the business, because then I can kind of manage what we're doing. And then I wasn't horrible with math.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, maybe I should try this, get the cameras and communications.
Yeah.
So I could kind of shoot our demo. Like, back then, you couldn't afford that stuff.
Yeah, because you were a college student. College financial student, aid probably really wasn't that much.
They didn't make camcorders or video cameras on your phone. Nobody had phones.
Yeah.
And you didn't walk around with cameras. But TSU had that equipment.
Yeah.
So I started shooting our shows, and one of my close friends had a camcorder where you put your VHS tape in.
Yeah.
And you would always see me, no matter where I was, walking around with this big-ass camera.
Yeah. Because
I would just shoot anything and then go back and edit it up. So I kind of got that bug.
Yeah.
And so when the group fell apart, I said, well, I got to do something. And I said, well, let me try this college thing, because I actually wasn't going.
Yeah.
I was just withdrawing. And so and we were really committed to what we were doing. Like I said, we'd take our refund check and pay for studio time.
Yeah.
And so when it fell through, I got into the television thing and communication.
Yeah.
And so.
And the setup, the way it is now, it's not even the same for the way it was when you was in college.
No, it's not the same, man. They had VHS reel to reel, tape to tape, editing bay. They only had two.
Yeah.
It was a million students in the department, but it was a lot of dedicated people.
Yeah.
Dr. Dixon, which is funny as hell. Tyrone.
Tyrone Dixon. I just found out he was part of Roll Bounce.
Yeah.
I just found this out yesterday.
He was kind of like our leader because Tyrone was getting his bachelor. He was a student too. And he would kind of tell us about AFI and all these other places in California to go get your master's. I never thought I could get a master's because I never thought I was going to get out of TSU.
Yeah.
You know, I was just there trying to find something to do. And so then Tyrone left and he moved to California. He went to AFI and then some other students left and they started doing stuff. And that's when it hit me that I could actually graduate. Like I could actually do this if you commit yourself. And so that's what I did. I had Dr. Poudet, who's the class you're about to take.
Yeah.
I flunked videography twice.
Damn.
Because I didn't show up.
The best video director flunked video?
I flunked videography and editing. Because all I wanted was a camera. I take the camera and go do my thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't care. Like I said, I never thought I was going to graduate.
Yeah.
Then Dr. Poudet took personal interest in me because the stuff when I did do it was like really nice. And I was just a edit junkie, man. I would just hang out in the lab and just do stuff.
Yeah.
So
he teaches you. Mm-hmm. Now he's going to teach me a couple of decades later. God damn, how old is he? Jesus Christ. God damn, Zen Master? God damn, Yoda.
Who they taught Dr. Ulassi.
No
shit.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Damn, Yoda from Star Wars, God dog.
And Dr. Lou Brown, which you guys don't see him, he started nurturing me on the academic side, taking that passion I had for production.
Mm-hmm.
Poudet taking the passion I had for production and focusing it on actually finishing and going to class. And, you know, the stuff that you get at HBCU, that personal attention that some of us need, you know?
That's true.
That some of us need. I wouldn't have never made it at Nice because I just would have been another number there.
That's true. I tell my publicists all the time, like, she went to Missouri.
Yeah.
Missouri is, like, one of the best communication schools. And I tell her, like, yo, there's a difference between you go to a PWI and a HBCU.
Yeah. Like, it's a huge difference.
I feel like they don't care about you. They just want the check.
There's so many people. The check. And I'd have been just another dude, with potential, never meeting that potential. And like I said, Poudet and Dr. Brown, like, really took me. Dr. Brown would come into the edit lab and take me out and walk me to class and then tell me after class, come see him so I can tell him what I learned.
Yeah.
And then start taking that and saying, okay, now you have to apply the same dedication you have to this.
To class.
You have to be well-rounded.
Yeah.
And it started becoming my brand. Like, if I touch it, no matter if it's something visual or for something academics, it's got to be the best.
Yeah.
Because I realized if I don't put my best foot forward, how successful could I really be?
Yeah.
And that became my mantra, man. So when I got to BET and the chick fired me, I was still fighting and trying because I was doing my best. I was spending the night. I would never do that if I had never got that from Poudet and Dr. Brown.
Right.
I was like, I'm going home. I don't know it. Whatever. You know.
Yeah, so Poudet played a big part
he played a huge part in who I am, man. Yeah. Huge part.
Damn, huge that's crazy. Poudet still teaching, God, dog. I'm like, Yoda. Well, that's his nickname now, but for me, Yoda, dog. But so now we're going to segue to, because I'm now BET came before Slim Thug, the Paul Wall.
Absolutely.
So how did that hookup happen?
Well, you know, BET is another good breeding ground. A lot of talent to producers and people came from BET, man. And so you make strong relationships in the entertainment field. People, like I talk about Snoop, which is a funny story because I've known Snoop for a long time in Rap City.
Mm-hmm.
When these guys would have their albums would drop. They had to come to BET, and BET was in D.C. They would spend a week there, and then they would every day go to a different show that BET had.
Yeah.
And you would meet the label reps. because that same rep will be bringing somebody else in next week, so you develop a relationship with them. Mm-hmm. The artist will be coming 2 months later because he's got to then promote his second single, and they spending the week there. So we're all eating together in the cafeteria. We're all hanging out.
Yeah.
And you never know who you bump into. I remember one time I came downstairs to go into the studio, and Quincy Jones was sitting there, you know. Yeah. So you say, hey, but they keep coming because it's BT.
BT, and that was the biggest. And that so was the only black network.
Exactly. Yeah. So you start building relationships with these people because you're working with them.
Yeah.
And so Snoop, I was doing a video for Mike Jones. It was Mike Jones, Snoop, and Bun B. And so we were shooting. It was in L.A.
And was it came, My 6'4"? No.
My 6'4".
Okay, that's one. Yeah.
So Snoop comes in. I'm shooting. And he goes, oh, hell no.
Yeah.
Oh, hell no, nigga. I said, what? He said, you Dr. T? You Dr. T?
Yeah.
It freaked him out. He was like, nigga, I kept thinking, who the fuck is Dr. T? I'm thinking some nigga with gold grill and the eyebrow.
I was
going to
ask you that, too. Where did that come
because
from?
Because of my smile.
Okay.
I got it from basketball.
Okay, gotcha.
I'm dating myself, but in practice in high school, I did a Dr. J move. I did the roll and dunked on.
Oh, yeah.
And so everybody in class, I mean, in practice was like, ooh, Dr. J. And I'm running down the court smiling.
Yeah.
And this one white kid yelled out, no, Dr. T. And everybody started laughing because I was always smiling.
Yeah.
So when I got to BET, I wanted to use something that would make me stand out in front of other people. So I started adding John Dr. T. Tucker in the credits because people would be like, what the hell is Dr. T.? So the first day that those credits aired on Rap City, the associate producer, Greg Trent, came out. And he was like, what the fuck is Dr. Teeth? I was like, aha. Aha. You know, so it's just a bunch of names. But if one stood out, I was using that as leverage to. Yeah.
Because John Tucker name, that's a very common name. I looked, I did research on you, and it had an article on Chronicle, and it had John Tucker highlighted.
Yeah.
So they had two articles. It was yours. In 2005, and it was like Surgeon John Tucker came out of surgery. Some army guy. I'm like, John Tucker's very.
That's a common name, man. That's my slave name.
So
from the Tucker plantation.
Yeah. So basically, so in 2005, just talk about that era.
So
that
how
Ron
that happened,
had.
I had always wanted to be a music video director.
Yeah.
While I was at TSU. And while I was at BET, my plan was to go to BET, make the relationships, work in music, and be able to spring into doing music videos.
Right.
Again, because the technology didn't exist for you to do that
right.
caliber work on your own. We shot on film.
Yeah.
And it took a lot of money. For me to do it on a lower level, you needed $30,000 for me to shoot your video.
Shit.
Still tipping was $30,000. And so I had to then build a reel, and what better place to build a reel, because major record labels are not taking chances on you, and you had to be picked up by a production company.
Yeah.
So I had to build a reel, and so what I did while I was at Rap City, I showed love to the local artists and to put them on Rap City. I had Screw and Big Pokey, Screw Mrs. Flight, on the basement. We came back here, and we did an underground Houston show and put – everybody, Bun, hosted it and made relationships with the artists here, not knowing that when I left BET, those same relationships would be my door into directing music videos. Those would be the first guys I would have access to.
Mm-hmm.
Rap-A-Lot, I had a great relationship with them, and I got to direct the Devin the Dude videos. And what happened is D-Rec gave me Man, was my first video while I was at BET.
Big Mo ESG.
Big Mo and ESG. Pokey. And so it was okay, but it was great for that time.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't my best because it was my first.
Yeah. I mean, to say Man was your first video was pretty damn, you know, awesome.
Yeah, and I was trying to get Lil X, get them to hire Lil X, and D-Rex said, I'm going to hire you. I was like, oh, wow. You know, I was honored, you know.
Yeah.
Because I'd never done a video. So then I took that video to get another one. And I had to go to some of the Dope Boy record labels because they had the money, take their artists, make their artists look good. And then I would take those videos and take it back to major labels and get them to pick me up. So
right.
at this point, I did a video called Hooker Hooker, Mike Jones.
Song. Ooh, Hooker 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 Hooker.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Hold on. That was you?
That was me.
God, this Chronicle article gave me like three songs. Yeah. You know, I ain't know who you was 12, 13 years ago. I heard the name, but damn, Chronicle? Shit, who wrote this 2005? They gave me Don't Trip. They Don't Know. Mike Jones.
Oh, man.
I'm like, God damn.
I done Ludacris, Rick Ross.
Hey, who? Come on, man. Whoever wrote this article 13 years ago? I mean, it's, you know what I'm saying? Come on, man.
Yeah.
They ain't give me nothing.
Well, that was the article that they wrote when I got nominated for the MTV Award.
Yeah, it was in Miami.
Yeah.
Yeah, I seen that.
Yeah. But Mike Jones saw Hooker Hooker and a Hooker Hooker and wanted me to do a video for him.
Yeah.
So I had to get with Swisher House. And I told him the cost, and G Dash was like, "Nah, I ain't paying that." And I was like, "Cool, don't." You know what I mean? Like,
what was the price?
It was $30,000.
$30,000, yeah.
And that was a real number because all the things that you have to buy the film and the equipment and the lights, and hire a crew. You know, just film wasn't something you just run out there and just shoot it like you shoot now with these DSLRs, you know, or these 4K cameras. And so, Wally at Clout. Went back to G Dash and was like, "Y'all need to really sit down and talk." Went back to me and I was like, I don't care about Swisher House. Yeah. So what? And so he was like, "I don't care about no Dr. Teeth." So he was like, "Nah, y'all need each other," because he saw the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And so we went back up to Clout's office. We sat down and I told him. And Dash said, "Okay, I'm going to hire you. We're going to do it. But if you mess up the video, I'll never hire you again. And I'll tell everybody not to use you," which I didn't care. I was like, cool. Because I knew I wasn't going to mess it up. I took it.
And this is the story serious. Leading up to Still Tipping.
This is the story leading up to Still Tipping. So what I did from my experience from BET, Dash gave me two records to pick. Still Tipping and another record called Throw.
Oh, good weed, good drink. Yeah.
Not that one? Nuh-uh. This is Fifth Ward Weeby.
Oh, thank God you picked Still Tipping. I ain't no disrespect to Fifth Ward Weeby, you know.
And Chopper.
Okay, thank God you picked Still Tipping. Great
so
mind, doctor.
I picked Still Tipping, and they put Throw It on the back end of the video. And so from my experience at BET and understanding marketing and all of that, I said, listen, you know, we could do a video and push it for BET, but I don't think BET cares. They push it major. You're going up against Def Jam artists.
True.
So they don't really care about what we got in this region. You talking about, you know, 04.
Yeah. And it's crazy because y'all don't even know at that time how big that record's going to be.
Right. We didn't know. We had no earthly clue. But we had a great marketing plan. And they were really good at what they did. They were great with radio.
Yeah.
I was good with my relationships for television. And so I said, let's do this. Let's stay true to your base. They've never seen Slim Thug, Paul Wall, Mike Jones, Magno.
And this is the introduction to Slim, Paul, Mike nationally.
Nationally.
Because everybody knew who they was local. But this was like the, hey, this is who we are, America. This is Houston. Okay.
So, and the Houston people never seen their superheroes, their rap superheroes, looking like stars in a music video.
Right.
Because they didn't have them. You know what I mean? You only got a music video if you got a major deal. These dudes never had a major deal.
True.
And so Slim, I don't think, never had a video. And I know Mike didn't, and Paul Wall hadn't either, and Magno hadn't.
Because before that, Paul Wall was doing a song with Committing. I forgot the name of the song, but they had like a single locally.
Yeah.
And then Mike, that was the first time I heard Mike Junker. That was on his album. Slim had freestyles in Houston and smaller songs, but it wasn't. This was
Slim at the time. Slim was like the. I guess the lyricist and the hot name, because he had a bunch of records. He had a joint with ESG that they did. Then he had, when he was on Swisher House, he had a lot of successful records, mixtapes with Swisher House.
Mm-hmm.
He had a big, well-respected buzz.
Yeah, over everybody else, yeah.
Over everybody else. Mm-hmm. If you was to ask me who I thought was going to be that dude,
Slim.
I'd have said Slim. I'd have never said Mike. No diss to Mike. But Mike had a crazy buzz at the time.
Yeah.
He was doing the mixtapes with Watts, and them mixtapes were like going off the shelves. Crazy. Yeah.
They had a good little duo.
That was a great duo.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then Paul Wall had a big situation with him and Chameleon there.
Mm-hmm.
With Mad Hatter, they were on his on that label. You know? And so it was a great package of hot local talent, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about a national playground, playing field going to BET.
Yeah.
And they don't care about local. Their market is national.
Yeah.
And their viewers don't care about Houston.
Yeah.
So I told them, I said, instead of us doing a video for BET, let's do one for the base. Let me create something where the local people never seen their rap heroes look like iconic superstars. Mm-hmm. Let's take all the videos that I've seen when these guys get deals. They never play back into the culture of the music, which was slabs, which was swangers.
Grills.
You know, elbows, swanging. Strip club culture, those chicks out of the strip club instead of getting some model. Pull a chick. We pulled the baddest chick that was getting the biggest
who was the
strip club.
Who was that?
The chick that was in the front. I don't remember her name, man, but she was bad.
Yo.
She had that ghetto sexy.
She was our Lyric Allure.
Yeah.
She was our Lyric, okay.
Yeah. And so I remember telling Watts, we're going to shoot in front of this rundown building, the grass was kind of high, and I remember when we were getting ready to shoot, Watts walked up. He said, "Man, y'all ain't even cut the grass." They would look at me like I was crazy.
Yeah,
y'all ain't even cut the grass. Like, this is hood, man. You the Pied Piper.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like,
you don't want no freshly cut grass.
No fresh cut
in
grass.
No hood.
Like,
what is
like
this?
That in the hood, man. This is authentic.
Yeah,
you just spin, and I'll put this chick in front of you, and we're gonna push in and out, and just capture that. 60 frames, slow motion. It's very
I remember
poetic.
That part, too. I remember this video.
That's what anchored the whole video. And then having Slim in the Escalade, because that's what he raps about, with that same girl. But we instead went for Uncut. And so Slim was like, "Y'all want the girl giving me head in the car?" And I was kind of like,
"That's the part. That's the sinister part in the video. That's the part right there. The head in the car. Was she really giving him head in the car or
my
no?"
My nice guy ass was like, "Really? You want to do that?" And he was like, "Yeah." So I looked at her. She was like, "Okay." No, she wasn't giving him head.
Oh,
she
was, damn, I kind of figured.
She was liking chicks. She didn't even like dudes.
Oh, she's one of
those. So she's just like nodding her head.
Oh,
right?
Okay. And I was like, one of the biggest theories of the video, was she really get okay?
Nah, but he looked like a boss.
Doing it. Yeah.
Getting it, you know, doing it. And so this is one of the things that happened that I kind of thought, well, maybe we shouldn't do that. But what I learned at BET and through experience is to get out of the way of my personal feelings and let what organically is happening happen.
Yeah.
You know, that was a big part of that video.
Yeah.
And then the cars swinging, getting the elbows. People had never seen that outside of Houston.
Never.
So when we finished the video, we took it. And then I played off the fire, which was a play from the album cover, the day the hell broke loose. So the opening is the fire transitions. Mm-hmm. All of that I put into that. And so then I went and got a good friend who promotes records, videos, mm-hmm. to then take the video to BET. It got on Uncut. That video played for a year. I told them, get your spins up around the country, because it was old in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Get your spins up. They follow spins. So they start working the spins. This record start catching on,
yeah.
because you were seeing it on Uncut, and now you're hearing it on
yeah.
the radio. So that was in 04. We shot that video in December. It came out 05. It played 05 that whole year up until August of 05. And then they got to deal with in the WIA situation. And it went to 106 in Park.
Mm-hmm.
And then it played all the way into 06, into June of 06.
Because that was a time where I always say that 05, the 05-06 was the pinnacle of Houston's run.
Yeah.
That was the best run we ever had.
It was the best run. And what we had did was architect between G-Dash, T. Ferris, and myself. We architect the whole Houston explosion.
So basically, you can say that if we had to name five people that basically was the impact of 05 and 06, you can put yourself in that five.
Fuck yeah. If I did not exist, that Houston explosion would never happen. If T. Ferris didn't exist, that Houston explosion would have never happened.
So you go with, so if you name five right now, you, T. Ferris, G. Dash.
I would name it me, G. Dash, T. Ferris. That's it. The artists, of course.
They got to do their part. But y'all basically the produce. Y'all the ones that running it.
Us three was the nucleus of making that happen. And then another guy on the video side that was very integral in helping me place this at BET, mm-hmm. which I won't say his name. But us four. And if you ask G-Dash, he'll say the same thing. Now, they had their team. They were doing that thing. And their radio people were doing that thing. Mm-hmm. But we had meetings. And the people in that meeting was Michael Watts, G Dash, T Ferris, myself, mm-hmm. And Watts' manager, Mike Clark.
Yeah.
But every meeting of execution of ideas, in my opinion, came from me, T Ferris, and G Dash.
And Still Tipping was the start of you got the back dens, you got. Because 05 was weird because I'm in seventh grade, and all of a sudden, nationally, Wayne Carter 2 come out. But then locally, Commander Sign of Revenge. Already Platinum Slim Thug. Back then, Mike Jones.
Yeah.
Bun B Trill.
Yeah.
Houston, to me, I like first Commander, to me, had the best rap mm-hmm. album in Houston, my mm-hmm. opinion.
Mm-hmm. But he had really, Scott Storch song.
So if you really think about it, Houston had probably four out of those people. They was like top 10 albums of that old thing on 05, 06.
Houston was on fire because what we didn't know was Chameleonaire was working his situation.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't a part of what we were doing.
I forgot about Paul Wall album, too.
Paul Wall had re-signed to Swisher House. Mike was, I don't even think Mike's album was even done.
You had Kiki. He came out with a mixtape, I think.
But Kiki wasn't a part of that movement. He missed the movement.
Yeah.
He missed the movement. Only part that Kiki played was on the Paul Wall song, They Don't Know.
They don't know
with them slabs.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know. He was on the hook. He didn't have a record. Pokey didn't have a record.
Flip had a
deal. He was the only national artist.
At that time, yeah, that game time, over.
Because he had that beef with T.I.
Yeah.
Remember? So we only had Flip. Slim had silently signed a deal with Pharrell. We didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we didn't know. And he wasn't a part of our plans.
Yeah.
But when the explosion started to happen, Chameleonaire was lined up for success.
Yeah,
Slim
Grammys.
Thug was lined up for success because they had these big records coming.
Yep.
And Swisher House was lined up for a label deal, which first artist out the gate they was taking was Mike Jones.
Yeah.
Still Tipping was not Mike Jones' record. It was a compilation album for Swisher
House. And it's weird because
Swisher House.
Out of Paul Wall, Slim, and Mike, it's only on Mike's album.
Right.
Why wasn't it on Paul or Slim? Because it felt like, because you listen to that song, I won't cut you off.
Yeah.
You listen to that song. It doesn't feel like a Mike Jones song. It just feel like a Houston anthem with those three on it.
Yeah.
That's how I take it in my ear.
And that's what it was because it was a compilation from the day the hell broke loose, I think, two.
Yeah.
G-Dash told me, I think at one point they were going to put it on everybody's record. I don't think they got that negotiated right the way mm-hmm. that everybody could use it. Yeah. Or they didn't want to. I don't remember because that was so long ago.
Yeah.
But what I do remember is that, you know, there was another version of Still Tipping that
I heard 50 was on one.
Did. Uh-uh. Rap-A-Lot did a version that had Chameleonaire on it. I think Slim was on it. Slim, Chameleonaire, and it wasn't Mike Jones.
Because was it a remix to it? Because I heard one, like, a little
still,
mix.
The Still Tipping that you heard is the remix.
Yeah, with 50 on it.
No, Still Tipping, you heard, because everybody went and did.
Oh, okay.
Saw the beat was so dope. He did the beat. The beat was so dope that, you know, Lil Wayne got a version, mm-hmm. you know. But I think the original Still Tipping record was on Rap-A-Lot.
Yeah.
And it was a mixtape that Watts was doing with another DJ.
Mm-hmm.
Watts took his art. Mike was on that record. Watts took his artist, took Chameleonaire off and added Paul Wall. It also created beef because during that time Chameleonaire was beefing with Paul Wall
mm-hmm.
and he was beefing with Mike Jones. Then Mike Jones started when we all got successful. I got successful, Slim, all of us got successful. We were meeting up in New York at Beyonce's check on it video for Pink Panther.
Yeah.
We all at the video. Bun and Mike is on, Bun and Slim is on that record. Mm-hmm. Bun had a record coming out. He got to benefit from that.
Yeah.
You know? And it just put a big look on Houston in that explosion, but then it also put an ugly dot on us because behind the scenes, man, it was a lot of beefing going on.
It was. That's why Pimp C came with that song, Knocking Doors Down. Well, came exactly. out of jail. He it's basically like he jail. Came out. I was like, man, what the hell is going on? Everybody beefing. He made that song.
We all getting this money, and I'm telling you, man, that thing made us all very successful.
So let's say, wait a minute, do you think that was the downfall of Houston? That the all the beef, because it looked like it trickled down to now in 2018, where I was going to get to is that we never had a run in Houston since that time, since 05.
Well, here's my thought. See, I think I got a great view, a great seat of the whole thing because I'm not from here.
Yeah.
And when people like think I like screwed and chopped music, and I don't, you know, but I'm an artist and I tap into the music and spiritually connect to it. So all I did was still tipping was apply to that visual what the culture was.
Yeah.
And that's what people gravitated to. They never seen elbows and cars swinging. That was something new. But now that you've seen it, in my opinion, when it came time and people were still looking when it came time for the second albums, everybody did the same thing. And the artists were asking me for the same videos, you know. Mm-hmm. And they want to swing. And it was just like, man, we done hung out in Miami.
Yeah.
We done hung out in New York.
They want to stick to Houston.
But they still want to stick to that.
The same culture.
The same culture, which is cool.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel as though, which part I thought that was not cool was I didn't feel like you elevated. We all had all these different experiences in a year that I don't see the growth. In the second project.
And I was going to say that because when you look at these people's albums, Chameleon, Slim, Paul, everybody, it felt like they didn't rebound on a second album.
Right. 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 I mean, you're supposed to take that another level up. If you're in now, before you was riding in slabs, and now you ain't thinking like, I look at Slim. When I first met Slim, he was riding in slabs. Slim always had money, always had a crib, always was about his money, right?
Yeah.
As we started being more successful, I would go to Slim. Slim went from the house he had on the north side to this big-ass house off of 290 with a Rolls.
Yeah.
So if you're driving in a Rolls Royce and living in this huge, I call it a mansion, but a big-ass, bigger house.
Yeah.
Talk about that experience. Talk about that. Let us feel that evolution. Let us grow with you.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to still talking about what you talked about the year before.
Yeah.
And I felt everybody did that. Now, this is my personal opinion because I don't produce their records.
Right.
But what was frustrating for me because I was trying to evolve visually with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want that. You know, they didn't want it. I can show you some videos that we did that never came out. Even with G-Dash, I was trying to do things, and he didn't want it. So they went to the dude that cloned my style of what I used to do, you know?
Yeah.
And so it just separated, man. All the things that spiritually connected us, that made us grow, were the things I felt that divided us and stunted the growth.
Yeah.
You know? Now, that's my opinion.
Yeah.
You know? I think it's pretty accurate, but they would probably say something different.
Yeah, because I just look at it now, me being born and raised. Obviously, you're older, and you was actually in the mix.
Yeah.
You was a huge impact in that era. I just look at it as far as, like, I think deaths took a part. You know, you look at Mo, Pimp C, everybody else that passed away. Then I look at the beef. Everybody was having beef.
Oh, man, the beef. I'm going to tell a story. I never told this story before. I'm going to tell it because I don't care. I'm old.
Keep it real. It's the real deal, baby.
Yeah. We went to the MTV Awards in Miami. Puffy came in on the big old boat, yacht.
Oh, my God.
Opened up the show. I think they had the pink carpet. We are national talents now.
Yeah.
We're backstage with Green Day. Talking to Green Day and introducing ourselves. And I remember me and G-Dash was talking to Green Day. I know who Green Day is.
Yeah.
So they were like, hey, man, so who are you? I'm like, oh, I'm Dr. Teeth. I directed
Still Tipping.
And then Dash, like, this is my artist, Mike Jones. He was the number one artist. Mike Jones' banner hung over Warner Brothers' office as the top sales.
Yeah.
That's two times platinum artist for that label.
Yeah.
And so they were like, yo, man, okay. They didn't know who Mike was, but they respected the fact that we were there. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about collaborations.
Green Day and Mike Jones.
Green Day and Swisher House. Now, I don't know if Dash remember it. I remember it because, again, I'm not from here.
Yeah.
So, and it was not my first time at the rodeo. You have to know, I had been at BET. I hadn't been to the BET Awards. I've been to the Grammys. You know, I had to cover that
stuff. And you was up nominated for Best Music Video.
Right. Yeah. Right. So I've been not in that position as a director, but I've been there as a dude who had to go to these places and cover. And I've dealt with artists pretty much most of my career at that point.
Yeah.
Through BET. Mm. So I wasn't a fan. This is what we worked towards. This is what I worked towards.
Yeah.
So to have that conversation with Green Day to me was very surreal and a confirmation of that moment.
Yeah.
And again, I was about growth. So we're there, and Mike Jones is opening up the show or performing at the show, and Slim and all of them. So everybody has Swisher House shirts. Switch House t-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And so the car comes, picks me up, takes me to where everybody is. You get the limo and that whole nice. You know,
all the lavish nice stuff.
All the lavish nice stuff, man. And you just feeling like a star.
Yeah.
I get out the car and I go to the back where everybody's got the tents and all of that. And Mike is in his tent. And his manager at the time stops me and says, hey, man. You wearing an Ice Age shirt. I was like, all right, cool, give me one.
Yeah.
Throw the Ice Age shirt on. And so Mike is back there, and he's manic about Ice Age and Swisher House.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what, huh? What?
Yeah.
Nah, man, we wearing Ice Age, man. They think I ain't wearing no damn Swisher House shirt. I swear to God, if you had a bio put my hand on as a grown man, I wanted to cry because we all, his talent, our efforts, their money, work to this. This is what you work for.
Yeah.
MTV Awards.
Yeah.
He now feels that everybody's wearing Swisher House shirts and not Ice Age shirt, and he ain't Swisher House. He's Ice Age. Ice Age didn't get us here. Mike Jones was a part to get us here.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Teeth was a part that got us here.
Swisher House.
Swisher House was the brand.
Yeah.
That hired me to do what we did.
Yeah.
Swisher House is who I was meeting with when we were organizing and plotting this blueprint that Minister Farrakhan told me what to do. Was it the guys that pushed this thing
So you
forward?
Felt from that moment when you seen him, when you heard him say that, you was like, okay, we cannot have this. In your head, you're like, oh, shit, we finna go downhill now.
In my head, I was just solely thinking, what the fuck? And this is not good.
Yeah.
And for him to say these things against Swisher House, I wanted to cry because this is what happens to us as black people, man. We start fighting against each other.
Mm-hmm.
We start dividing each other. All I'm going by is the facts. Mike felt that Swisher House was plotting against him. And I could tell you, again, on a stack of Bibles, G-Dash, any ideas that I ever had, even when we were doing Still Tipping, because Mike is the one that brought me to the party, right?
Yeah.
So he's a big part of that movement because he was the one who liked what I did to say, let's come together. And so G-Dash said, okay, Teef, when we started working, he used to always say, make sure Mike is feeling that. Like, mm-hmm. I want to make sure I give my artists what they want. He has never told me ever, oh man, fuck them. This is what we're doing. I've had labels say,
yeah,
fuck them. I want this.
Yeah.
And pull wedges in between me and Artie.
Swisher House made y'all.
Major labels.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not no local Swisher House shit. And then they're not local because they got to deal with Asylum and Warner Brothers and Atlantic.
Yeah.
But I've had major artists that you, million-dollar cribs and doing crib shows where the label has told me, fuck them. This is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Right? G-Dash has never said that to me in reference to his artist. Always wanted to support the artist first. He yeah. said to me, I want to have an artist first label. So now knowing my truth and Mike has his truth, what he thinks is in his head, I know that this is not true, man. And we can squash this with a conversation.
Yeah.
Let's not be divided and start tearing each other down before we just got started.
Like exactly. This was the...
Yeah.
The star is still tipping. Just, yeah.
We just got started, man. Yeah. We about to take this thing over.
So now instead of ascending, this was the beginning of the downfall not just for Mike, but for Houston.
For Houston. Yeah, that's true. Because I came out with the Ice Age shirt, and G-Dash said, oh, okay, so you wearing Ice Age? I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
Oh, you in the middle of something that you ain't even want to be a part of. What?
So... I get pulled over by the one of the label people, and then they tell me these dudes is beefing, and I put on a shirt, so I guess I didn't pick the side. I ain't that dude. I go in there and wear no shirt. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like I'm not. I don't play them childhood games.
Yeah.
And so when Mike came out, he walked past everybody, didn't speak. And went to the stage with his crew, and they all start performing. And Swisher House came, and we were all on stage. Slim, all of us on stage. You look it up, you'll see. We're outside. They bring up these big old cars, and everybody throwing the H up. And
yeah.
It's they doing still tipping. And at that moment, it was the beginning. That was the beginning of the end.
Damn. So you think if that never happened, that small incident? Could you can you imagine?
Well, it was brewing before because again, we got successful. I had just finished doing the Trina Lil Wayne video, in Miami. Mm-hmm. Slim is doing shit with Tip, and they, you know, everybody's all over the place.
Yeah.
So we meet up in little award ceremonies and shit, and we kind of come back together, right?
Yeah.
But we're a million miles from where we started. A million miles. Everybody got money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everybody's got experiences. Everybody is bosses.
Yeah.
And to get to this moment, to be divided, to not be together, to be separate, it was over. And looking back, it was over.
Yeah.
Because it was never the same. That beef, I believe, led to, you know, Mike and Paul not fucking with each other. People tolerate Mike. And the energy changing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Just the energy change, man. And you can't tell the two-time platinum artist to go sit his ass down. You just got to take it.
So you could, and so with Mike Jones having he feeling that way, that led to other small beefs as well, and mm-hmm. then it just like boom, Houston imploded. Houston yeah. had never been the same ever since. Yeah. Do you think I'm gonna ask you this too? Because before we get out, I'm gonna ask you this: can you see Houston getting back to where it was in 05? If so, what would it take?
Okay, well, I don't listen to the music no more.
Okay, well, see, I'll
be honest. But what I will say is you have somebody like Travis Scott that is from Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Major artist, but he don't really rep Houston like they do.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it even matters. Houston is Houston. That's his home, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he don't rap it like they rap Houston. These dudes, Slim, live and breathe. Yeah. Nah, Houston.
Slabs, swangers, elbows, yeah. grills, yeah. everything.
You know, and now you listen to Slim and his music is evolved because he ain't doing the grills. He got his teeth done. And
yeah.
He on his grown
haircut and everything.
Yeah.
Soul brother boy.
On his health kick. But back then we repped Houston, you know, and we made sure that light shined back on the city. It would take, there's some talent that's out here, man, but it's just had to be something that's going to have to happen organically.
Yeah, because that was organic.
Because that was organic. Even when Rap-A-Lot blew up and the Ghetto Boys blew up, that was organic.
Yeah.
It wasn't like we're gonna put Houston on the map. It's like we about to do some good music and we about to do our thing.
Yeah.
And when the light shined on them, they was like, yo, this is out of Houston. Like, Jay Prince was adamant about not being a baby Def Jam, but being Rap-A-Lot.
Yeah.
And branding Rap-A-Lot in Houston, Texas, you know.
Yeah. I was going to say that. I always said this, too, about Houston now, that I feel like it starts at the top. And when I'm talking about the top, I'm talking about Prince.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel that, to me personally, that I feel like it's just starting right there. And I think if he didn't have as much impact and involvement, I think Houston, in my opinion, can be bigger than what it is.
Well, here's the thing. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
Glad you said that. Jay Prince is a lot of things, but I can only go off of my interaction with Jay Prince.
Yeah.
Jay Prince gave me my second video.
Yeah.
two videos with Def and the Dude, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing but supportive. Jay Prince will have 3 a.m. meetings where I had to come to the office and we would sit up and talk about what he wanted to do for his artists.
Yeah.
Very supportive dude. Jay Prince, when I was at BET, I came and I did a charity basketball game. Jay Prince personally called me and asked me why we not a part of it and then sent me a check for $1,000.
Wow.
He had to do that, and I don't even think he can remember that.
Yeah.
And then when Swisher House got that deal, in order to get the type of deal they wanted, Jay Prince came in and was a partner on the Warner on the Asylum side.
Yeah.
To put in money to help facilitate the deal so it could happen the way that it did.
Mm-hmm.
He never came in. He never chose sides. He never bullied Mike and or bullied Swisher House or took over.
Yeah. So the perception is like this bully that he is.
Right.
He's really.
Right.
In your experience, not even.
My experience, he's always been an asset to the community. And, you know, in any business, I've had guys tell me, well, he called us in and wanted us to work with him and we declined. And that was it. He was like, okay, respectfully, respect it.
Yeah.
He didn't go at you. He didn't send no goons to you.
That's the theory of sending goons and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm really good friends with Bun and these guys. And Bun has never told me that he had a bad experience with Rap-A-Lot. So it's part of the myth.
Yeah, the whole sock. Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there's some truth to some things I never got.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That never happened to me.
Yeah.
But I don't think Jay Prince is the issue because I think he would more than anything like to see the city Cheaties. Shine.
Mm-hmm.
It's and the fact I is think that he the passed last. It over to his son.
Yeah.
Who
that found
you know,
Drake.
Doing this thing. Yeah, found Drake that's doing this thing. You know, if he's your friend, man, he's a protector for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the godfather.
And it's crazy, too, because I say this. This is how I feel about Houston. We almost had a run in 2015. You probably so you say you don't listen to music. Heard of a guy named Sauce Walker?
Yeah.
Remember that song he had the hit? Forgot the name of the song. What is it? Too Legit to Quit It.
Yeah.
He had that.
Yeah.
He almost had the remix with Drake.
Yeah.
But he spoke out on Drake, and that's what killed it. My opinion is that if he would have let Drake get on that remix, it never spoke.
It took him out. Again, organically, it has to happen. We deserve more than just one album. We did it big.
Yeah.
But just one run, we should have came back. It should have been a movement.
Mm-hmm.
We had Kirk Cobain's coming shortly, a couple years after that.
He had a small little run he had.
it could have been a movement. At the time we were doing it, the only outsider that was in Houston that Cass was not fucking with was Lil Flip. He was the only one. Yeah. He was beefing with everybody. I mean, he was beefing with Slim, you know? Yeah. And so Flip at that time, again, my opinion, he was separatist, but I feel like he probably felt that way because you guys are too young to remember, but they were saying that he wasn't really a part. A lot of cats were saying he wasn't really a part of the screwed up clique.
Like, oh man,
that he really wasn't, you know, when you think of that, you think of Hawk and,
mm-hmm.
You think of Kiki and Fat Pat and
Mo
and Pokey. And
you even had a dude. He was on June 27 Freestyle. Youngster.
You know, but you don't think of Flip. Those dudes, those guys back then, they didn't really.
Yeah, those are the old. Those are the originals.
Right. Flip was a young cat that came in right before Screw died.
Mm-hmm.
But Screw fucked with him, and so I think he carried that animosity. His career. And so he had beefs, man. He had beefs with dudes, man. And it's just not healthy for the Houston music community. Yeah. Us to fight against each other, because what happens is when I help you, that just made my network stronger. It just made our network stronger.
Mm-hmm.
If I need a hit and you hot and I got talent, I can always get you on my record and we can make a hit together.
Yeah.
You know? It's what Atlanta does. And I'm not saying that they don't have beefs with each other, but
you can't even tell. Like they had they got a 20-year run. They never stopped. They was in the crunk era. Man. You had Outkast before that. Now you have 21s and the Futures. It's like their run never stopped. They like the damn Green Bay Packers. They always relevant.
And see, my relationship with Future, man, is cool as fuck, because Rico Wade, who was one of the head cats of Organized Noise, you know, Organized Noise put together Outkast and Goody Mob.
Mm-hmm.
They were the initial run for Face Records.
Yeah.
And Orlando McGee linked me with Rico, and Future was a fan of the stuff that I had done, you know, throughout the whole Houston thing. So I wound up working with Future. And these guys, now you got first generation of music through Rico, who's doing those Outkast and Goody Mob hits.
Yeah.
Years later, now executive producing his cousin Future.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, these guys still fuck with each other.
Yeah.
And you could easily say, oh man, I ain't fucking with Organized Noise. That's old.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we do each other.
Yeah.
That don't mean Rico ain't got fucking ears. Yeah. Obviously he do, because he put this whole Future situation together.
Mm-hmm.
He orchestrated that with Mike Will, you know. So we disregard cats, man, and we really hurting ourselves, because that's years of experience.
Yeah.
I had a student in the class last semester say, what have you done? And I just laughed. I said, nothing.
So you was trying, she was trying.
She was shooting the shot.
Yeah.
But you don't know. You
never know who you know until you just have a conversation or something.
I'm here not because I fell off. I'm here because I felt, because of Dr. Pude and Dr. Ulassi and Dr. Lou Brown, that I need to give a group of people what they gave me. I found myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I was able to change lives in my family through the money I was making.
Yeah.
And I felt a strong sense of responsibility to give them an inside look of what was given to me, right?
Yeah.
That's a whole nother story. But, you know, every year I produce the BET Awards. Last year I was a creative director for the top 10 countdown for the BET Experience.
Yeah.
I took students with me as I produced that show and created that show and produced it and executed, you know, for air. Yeah. I still work.
Yeah, you still do. Now still that, and that's my question I was going to ask you, too, before we get out. Now that you're still a professor at TSU, what's next for you?
I want to do film. Mm-hmm. So while I was at TSU, I did my thesis film, my coming out film. It's a French New Wave film, Passant Two. It's really dope. It's getting entered in film festivals. Mm-hmm. I think we're entering the American Black Film Festival. We enter Cannes. We enter Sundance, Tribeca. We're waiting to find out if we got in.
Yeah,
I'm fully into filmmaking now and telling those stories. And so we're working on a script. I'm reading Asada Shakur's book. I want to do a film based off of Asada Shakur's life. We got this comedy that we're working on. And so you're going to look up. I won't be at TSU, and you're going to see my ass back on TV. Yeah. You're doing what I'm doing, and these students will be looking. You should have took advantage of opportunity when I was there in your face teaching. Yeah. Because, again, we look at people and we think because we have access to them, they don't have anybody. They ain't doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Or
they think you fell off, washed
because
up.
Because you've done it, you know, these things so long ago that you fell off. But if you look at how many people are actually directing, I've been nominated for BT Hip Hop Award Director of the Year, Best Video, all these nominations. If everybody could get it, then everybody would have one.
Yeah.
Right. Everybody don't have one.
Mm-hmm.
And so here you have someone in your face that has these accolades, these experiences, these acknowledgments.
Yeah.
That is trying to teach you what they do.
Yeah.
And you think they fell off.
So is that why is, and I said I was going to ask one more question, but damn. It led me to this conversation. Is that why, because I never had your class.
Yeah.
But people are like, damn, I like Dr. T, but damn, he an asshole. He be yelling at me. He be doing all this. He be getting on me. I come 1 minute late, and he kicked me out the class, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that's why. Because we have, black people, we have this bad trait. We have a sense of entitlement. We have a sense that people owe you something. Somewhere along the line, the millennial generation has lost their purpose, in my opinion, and understanding what was taught to me. If you're doing this, you got to do it better than anybody to get your shot.
Yeah.
Nobody, white, black, especially black, we ain't giving up. Just went on how we not together.
Yeah.
It's going to give you shit. So if you play the game, one, if you show up on time and they look up and they see you like, oh, now you killing some of these stereotypes they already have about you before you even walked in and opened your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
If you execute and work harder than they do, now you killing another stereotype that you're lazy.
Yeah.
If your creative skills matches your work ethic, now you a superstar. Because even some of the great people don't even put in the time, you know what I mean, to do this thing. And so when you come with a strong work ethic, you are now setting yourself up to win. I know this because that was the whole reason I got on the beat at Rap City.
Rap City, yeah.
Because they saw me spending the night there with the person who spends the night doing this for a living. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy I look is doing the same thing I'm doing, and he ain't got to. I got to.
Mm-hmm.
But he ain't got to. Who is that?
Yeah.
So I teach them with a passion, but it's up to them to get it. You know what I mean? If they don't get it and they only take it as, oh, this dude is yelling, I yell because I'm scared for your future. You know what I mean? I get in your ass because I want you to succeed.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hard on you. I'm cool. Yeah, I'm cool, but I'm hard on you because I'm trying to give you what was given to me so that you recognize it when you get the opportunity.
And someone to understand.
A lot don't understand, you know. And so, you know, it is what it is. I had to realize last semester I can't save nobody.
True.
And so it kind of is just saying that, you know, I did my time. I think I was at TSU for 3 years, maybe four, 15. I came in 2015, end of 2015, beginning of 2015. And so maybe 14. This is not a career for me. You know, this was a thing that I came to solely give back.
Mm-hmm.
And so I realized last semester, this is about, I'm at the end of the road.
Yeah.
Because now I got to go back and do what my life work is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I'm working hard to, Irv Gotti has a show called Tales that comes on the BET.
Mm-hmm.
I've been working real hard to get to direct the episode of that show.
Yeah.
So this would be my first directorial debut for television.
Tales.
You Tales.
Okay.
And what I'm doing is now everything I did before, when I got to Channel 11, when I got to BET, building the reel, mm-hmm. working to get accomplish what I did in music video, now as a director for film and television.
Yeah.
So I'll take my student, my short film, and use that as a opportunity to get a job. And then I'll take what, if I get this thing with Herb, I'll put that together and use that to get the next, to the next, to the next,
yeah.
to be in the game. And then I'll be out of there.
So you took a hiatus. Now you're trying to come back and be the greatest.
Exactly.
There you go.
There you go.
Dr. Teef, Real Deal with a Kill. First episode of 2018 is in the books. We out.